Good afternoon, listeners, and it's a brand new show, Nick Elliott Podcast. It's Sunday, 14th of April, is it? And yep. I'm joined by my dear friend and the lovely Annie Brooks, who is also my PA in the UK. So welcome, Annie.
Hello, Nick. It's lovely to catch up with you again. It's been a long time.
How you been?
I've been all right, thank you. Can't complain, really. What about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Been busy, a little bit tired this last week. It's been a lot of early mornings, a couple of late nights, you know, so that knocks me up. Can't do it as I used to. I don't know why.
What have you been doing then?
I went to this film meeting thing in Norwich last Monday, which turned out to be a 1 o'clock finish.
Really?
Yeah, which was a lot later than what I wanted it to be. But it was a good gig. First time I'd been. And it's a networking thing, okay. You know, that they do. And there's another one this coming Friday in Yarmouth, would you believe, which they're going to hold on the beach. I quite fancy a bit of that. Yeah,
I hope the weather's like this.
Well, it's quite a nice day, isn't it, out there?
Yeah.
It really is. But it's taken a long time because I think it's about 2 years we've been going to do this podcast, isn't it? It's been
a
while.
A long time, hasn't
it? A while since we've caught up. But it's good to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. Nice to be invited.
And how you been? What's been happening in the world of Annie Brooks, apart from all the stuff that you do for me?
Well, yeah, I do a lot of things for you. I do do. I've got another job, haven't I, in the daytimes, and I'm a teacher's assistant in a primary school with little 5 and 6 year olds. It keeps me very busy, but I've only just gone down to 3 days a week.
You've been off, haven't you? It's half squirm.
Yeah, we had half term. We had 2 weeks off for Easter. I managed to get over to Norfolk for the day. That was nice.
All right.
Yeah, went to Sunny Honey.
Okie dokie.
It was lovely.
I heard that Helen Skelton was there, weren't she, in the week?
She's been there this week.
Has she?
Yeah, with her family. They're staying at somewhere just outside King's Lynn. Great
really?
Petney.
Don't know.
It's on the A47.
No, wouldn't know.
So I think she got gifted that, and she's been all over Hunstanton and Wells the last few days.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody goes to Wells, don't they? Why, I don't know.
I love Wells. I used to have a caravan at Wells.
Can't stand the place.
Why?
Always too many people. Tourists.
Well, it is busy, but you have to avoid the people.
It's a nonsense. Queuing 3 miles for a bag of chips. I mean, what is that about? Only the fucking English should do that, wouldn't they?
Well, I have to say, I do queue, but I make sure I'm first in that queue.
No, can't be doing with any of that nonsense. No, not at all.
And what about yourself, then?
You
say this film networking thing. What sort of people were there?
Well, film people. Film people, sound people, cameramen, producers, all that kind of stuff, you know, and it's a kind of a bit of a melting pot for ideas, and you meet up with people, and I think we pulled in a lot of extras. I was there with another guy, producer and director Chris Smith, that worked on the film that I was on for the past 3 months, Buying Time, and me and Chris went along, and I think he's kind of recruited 4 or 5 extras.
Okay.
Yeah, for the next production, whatever that's going to be. We're not too sure yet. I know that my production is coming up later on in the year. Short Days, Long Shadows. The film noir film that I want to shoot, which will be a full length, hopefully ready for general release, all being well. That's the plan. But I want to start shooting in August time because I'm looking to have bad weather.
There'll be
a lot of night shoots, a lot of night shoots. So I'm looking for rain, fog, all that kind of sinister shit.
Well, that could be any day this year, though,
it could be in July, couldn't it, really, in this country.
What can you tell us about this that you're allowed to tell us about?
Well, it's a project that I've wanted to do, I think, probably since I was about 13, 14.
Oh, gosh.
Because of my background and my history of film. My mum and dad were very cinema film orientated. My dad was a projectionist at various different cinemas through East Anglia. Mum was an usherette, which is how they met. So my kind of background and influence of films had been massive from a really small age. You know, and we watched a lot of the old proper films, what I call British black and white films. You know, the film noir style, the kind of Robert Mitchum's, Philip Marlowe's, you know, Bogart, that kind of Bacall, all them kind of that style, that genre of film. And we watched a lot of them. My mum and dad watched a lot of films. So it was something that heavily influenced the style that I have with the stills. And I made the decision to do it at Christmas time.
Mm.
I spoke to the production company, had a word with them, and we decided, yeah, let's give it a go. You know, but we were busy with buying time at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that had to finish production on that anyway, should I say shooting it. That side of the production. And then we'd sit down and kind of put the whole thing together for Short Days. That's the idea. I credit the title to you because you came up with the title, didn't you?
Well, by accident, I think. I think I was just talking about a picture, an image that I was copywriting for you. And I just said, didn't I? Oh, it was a picture of you and your friend Dave, wasn't it?
Yeah, Dave Lowndes.
Of you together, just your shadows.
That's
and I just
it.
Went, oh, look at that. And I think it might have been the shortest day or something. And I said, oh, look at that, Short Days, Long Shadows.
Yeah, cracking title.
And you've took that on board then.
Yeah, it really nice. Sums up what the film's about. It definitely sums up what I'm about, kind of dark, shadowy, you know, seductive places, a little bit sinister and that kind of thing. So that's what we're going to do. I think we've got about 14 scenes already down.
Okay.
They're only loose. You're probably looking at about 40 to do a full length.
Are you shooting it in colour or black and
white? No, it's all going to be black and white.
It'll all be
black and white, chuck a bit of grain onto it, destroy it a bit. Pretty much it's a transfer of, like I say, my style from the stills over into moving.
Mm-hmm.
I've directed four music videos in the past over the years, but I don't want to shoot this one. I'm not shooting it. I'm purely going to direct it. That's all I want to do.
Okay.
The direction of it is massively important to me, but it's just concepts that are in my head. There's going to be a fine art coffee table book that will sit alongside with it, which will be a collection of fine art stills from the film.
Mm-hmm.
But the film is actually, I'm doing it the other way around. I'm kind of building the film around the stills. The stills and that collection are already in my head,
yeah.
Although I have shot pretty much the first 20 minutes of the film.
Right, okay.
You know, but it's only in my head.
Right.
Only in my head. So I don't want to shoot it. There'll be a crew that will shoot it and I should just direct it so that I get exactly what I want. That's the plan.
Wow.
Yeah, so
Have you got any ideas of who your actors might be?
Well, I think the lead role will be Andy Blythe.
Right.
Yeah. That'll be the lead role. I'm not going to say a lot more about the stories than that. The plot of it. There is a plot.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a story.
Yeah.
So I won't say too much about that at the minute.
No.
But we've got various different meetings going on over the next couple of months. And we're going to kind of put that together and start and get something down, you know, on paper.
Brilliant.
I don't do that bit. I don't do the writing down shit. I just do the coming up with the concepts and, you know, the ideas and the scenes in my head. I have got a story.
Is this the first film that you've actually going to be directing on your own?
Yeah. It's the first one I've ever really done.
Yeah?
Yeah, first one I've ever really done. But we think it'll probably take about a year to shoot.
Okay.
I'm not going to rush and tear about.
No.
You know, don't do rushing and tearing about. Certainly on something like a creative project, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all. But it's going to be a little different, I'll say.
Oh.
A little different.
Now, you're just teasing us now.
Well,
it's teasing us, listeners.
It is. I don't think I will say. No. won't say.
Oh, okay.
No, I won't
keep
say
it wrapped up for nearer the time.
Yeah.
Now, going back, though, I hear a little bird tells me that you've actually been acting in a film.
Well, actually, I've done many cameo roles, as you know, in music videos and films and the rest of it. Well, I've always played myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no actor. I don't profess to be an actor. Not at all. I'm a behind the camera man, not a front. Buying Time turned out that I'd got quite a big part in it, which I didn't actually know. Yeah. because I shot all the behind the scenes images, because there's going to be a book that will roll out along with the film, which is literally a rockumentary of the making of the film, or pretty much a lot of it. I worked on it on and off over about a 3.5 month period, and I tend to just pick the days that I think, oh, that sounds interesting. You know, I'll go along and do that, cover that bit. But although it does document the film, the production of the film and how it's made, and a lot of the cast. But I just I didn't want to just do Mickey Mouse shots.
Right.
This is this set, this is that set with somebody in it, you know, and a girl here and a guy there. And so what I've done a really I'm really pleased with the collection, you know, a very kind of Hollywood take on it, I think. But old Hollywood, 30s, 40s, which is what I'm about.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't got a lot of time for modern day Hollywood, not at all. I don't watch a lot of new films, and American ones just drive me around the fucking bend. I can't be doing with it. Always got to be English films, British films. Nobody makes films like the British. They don't, and they never will do. I don't really know why that is. I think that's because our writers are very, very good. But the production is always different. You know, Americans, it's all about big budget, CGI, green screens and all this nonsense. No. It's not what it's about at all. Not for me. So there'll be none of that kind of rubbish used on my film at all. It will be proper lighting, proper cinematography, you know, proper photography, and it'll be proper writing. You know, I'm not saying that films today are not well written, or the screenplays or whatever are not well written, the whole scripts, because there are some good ones. But yeah, things like bloody Marvel and Spider-Man and Harry Snotter, and I mean, what is all that shit about? Snotter. You know, let's make 25 Harry Snotter Potter films. You know.
Oh, gosh.
Nonsense. Absolute bloody nonsense.
Well, I like Harry Potter.
I know you do. You're a massive fan, aren't you?
I am.
No, can't be doing with it.
But then I do like some of the old ones. I mean, one of my favourite films now, Nick, from when I was a little girl, and it's a colour film, it's not black and white, was White Christmas.
Oh, yeah, cracking.
And I can tell you all the script as it comes along. I know all the lines, and that, to me, is classic Hollywood. And
yeah, still
gets me every time.
You know, for me, that's the best Christmas film ever. I think so. Yeah. I think so. But proper actors, but it got some style in them days. I mean, women had got style.
Yeah, they had.
You know, the way men dressed, and hats and raincoats,
yeah,
overcoats, suits and all this kind of stuff. You know, it got some class and some style. I'm a big fan of that. Yeah, I'm a big fan of that. I am.
Well, you always dress stylishly, don't you?
I do try. I do try. Yeah, image is wickedly important to me. Yeah, it is wickedly important to me. Always has been. Always has been. Always has been. Even, you know, going back to be a ute, if you want to call it that. You know, it was never a jeans and T-shirt type of gig.
No, what
not
did
at
you
all
wear?
Well, a lot of leather, obviously, because I was biking at that kind of time and the rest of it. But, you know, I always was image conscious, very image conscious. Yeah, I was. You got to be, I think. Certainly, not only because you got to look good, but because I think it's one of those things that you've got to keep alive. Class and style, and you ain't got none of that in the UK. It's a nonsense, isn't it? Places are bloody nonsense.
Where do you go to get your style then? Which countries then give you aspirations?
Oh, we're Italians, French, Europeans, Spanish, but the Italians, nobody dresses like the Italians. Nobody. I have quite a few Italian friends, very close friends, one in particular, a guy called Sepp Cipriano that I've known for years. Stangren lad, and me and Sepp are very close, but you know, the man has always really known how to carry threads, big time. Yeah. But nobody dresses like the Italians, and the French, you know, French women, classy, very classy.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
Yeah,
they know how to do it.
Yeah,
From all ages.
And the Italian women are, up until when they get kind of, you know, into that zone of dressing in black, which they have to do, don't they? It's a religious thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they lose their mum and dad, I think it is.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I think it is. Yeah, that's how it was with the families that I grew up with anyway.
Okay.
You know, when they lose their parents, I think the women dress all in black.
Wow.
I think that's how it works. I don't think it goes right across the board, not in Italy, but certainly with the Italian families that I knew very well growing up and that I went to school with, that was the gig.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something to do with religion and respect for the parents.
Right, okay.
Yeah, which I think is a pretty good thing.
I thought it was when their husbands passed away, but I could be wrong, and I should imagine you know more than I do.
I thought it was mum and dad's,
yeah, okay.
But I'm not sure. So, you know, what would be grandfathers, grandmothers of the children and all that kind of stuff. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's something to do with that.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm sure our Italian PA would put us right.
Oh, gosh, Raffi.
Yeah.
Yes, she would.
Yeah,
hi, Raffi, if you're listening.
That's certainly, I think, it, in the ones that I knew, you know, in Stangren and Peterborough. Yeah, it was that kind of gig.
Okay,
but
cool.
I don't mind black.
No, not at all. I like wearing black.
My favourite colour, black.
Yeah.
Anything black is my favourite.
It's all
about you. Yeah, yeah, totally. So, yeah, that's you know, that's where we are, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, hopefully, that's production on that's going to start about August time.
Right.
Although we're working on it up until that period. But and I think Buying Time is due for release sometime about end of June.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I do believe. And I think Andy Blythe, it's his baby.
Yeah.
And it was his production company, A-Turn Films, that shot it. Although there was a big crew, but it was produced by A-Turn Films. And I think there's a premiere being discussed as we speak.
Oh, that'd be exciting.
Which would be a nice gig.
Yeah.
I've only seen clips. I've only seen the clips, well, very small segments of the bit that, of a gunfight. I'm in a gunfight, which...
Are you really?
Yeah, I quite fancied. I thought, whoa, when you put me in a gunfight,
yeah,
big time.
Like your old westerns and
oh,
that.
Oh, bloody
gangster
great, man.
Films that
well,
you used to like.
I mean, you know, fantastic for me because, I mean, me and my brother used to play, you know, if you want to call it, cowboys and Indians.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had many happy hour doing that, yeah. Mm. Yeah, really good. Fantastic.
I can just see you two with your little... pistols and your caps inside.
It was wonderful memories, that was.
Yeah.
Yeah, me and Gaz did do it a bit professional, though.
Did you?
Yeah, it was
you didn't do cap guns like I did.
No, it was a SAS kind of vibe, even at the age of about 12.
Not like me on the road, just shooting the cars as they went by. Pew, pew, pew.
No, we didn't bother with anything like that. No, we did it properly.
Mm-hmm.
We'd done most things properly, really, I think, me and my brother. Yeah, over the years.
You've done a lot of things together, you and your brother Gaz, haven't you?
Oh, Christ, yeah. We were massively close, all the time. We did everything together, whenever we went together. And we did that up until both of us got married.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. We don't do it as much now, which is a bit of a drag. It'd be nice to get that back on. But, we've done some nice things over the recent years together. But my brother's very busy with the cars and that, you know, the race team and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really have the time, which is a bit of a drag.
Mm. Oh.
But one of our favourite times is coming up next month, and that's the Monaco Grand Prix.
Do you know what? I was thinking about that when we were talking about Italy. And I suddenly thought, oh, it's near to Nick's favourite Grand Prix of the year, of his life, I should imagine.
Oh, it is. I mean, we'd never miss one. Yeah, me and my brother, no, we never miss one.
Mm-hmm.
We never miss one. It was a must-see. And as a family, we watched it. But me and my brother, I don't think we've ever missed one in all our lives.
What is it about the Monaco Grand Prix that you feel so drawn towards? Why?
Well,
you know?
Monaco, for me, is my most favourite place on the planet. Scotland would come a close second, but it's Monaco. Because not only from the F1 part of it, yeah, it's a fantastic circuit. It's full of history. The legends of the sport have, you know, won some fantastic races there. It's always considered the highlight of the season. Although I'm a big fan of the European meets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't much bother with the kind of Middle East shit. You know, I think they just bolted that on because it's something else to do, and it makes a shitload of money for the Arabs.
Well, it makes money, doesn't it? Yeah.
Not that the Arabs need a shitload of money, they are. Like Japan, I didn't bother with Japan, and I think it was a trip back.
It was Australian as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, that's a bit of a yawn because obviously the time differential kind of screws things up a bit there. You can't sit there. I don't know, I'm a bit weird. You've got to watch it live. You've got to watch it when it's actually happening. It's got to be in the afternoon. You can't watch F1 at night.
Night
F1. They're good, but they're not. They just don't have the vibe, like proper F1.
Sunday afternoon.
Oh, no. And I mean, as you know, motorsport has been such a big part of my life. Mm. Me and my brother.
You started with swimming. Your brother was football. How come suddenly racing became the thing between you?
No. I mean, didn't suddenly. Motorsport was massive.
Okay.
Right from an early age, we just got into it. Me and Gaz just got into it big time. And I raced bikes. Gary raced Formula Ford cars. And Gary's a car man. He's always been a car man. The same as I'm a photographer. Mm-hmm. And I've done that since being an 8-year-old boy. And my brother has been the same. And that's down to Dad. Mm-hmm. Dad was the influence on both of those cases. You know, and my brother has always been around motorsport and, you know, had his race team. Ross was main driver on that, Radical, BMW series. You know, it's always been such a big part of our life. Motorcycles and cars. You know, fast cars, fast bikes.
Did you used to race yourself?
Yeah, I used to race motorcycles.
Did
yeah.
You really?
Yeah, I raced Ducatis, TZ 250, 350 Yamahas, Air Mackies.
Mm.
Yeah.
Were you ever successful? Did you ever win a race?
No. We it was one of those things that you kind of, the cost of it, Annie, is gaga.
Is it?
It was gaga when we did it. You know, you'd work on the bike or the car or whatever. Let's say a bike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every night. You know, till 2-3 in the morning, get it ready, tow it off to Mallory Park, which is just up the Kermit from here.
Yeah.
One of the great circuits. And you get 100 yards rain, it'd blow up.
Oh, that God, was it. Really?
Yeah. Pack up, go home.
Oh,
you know, and that's what it was. That's what it was. And I mean, obviously now, F1 is nothing like that at all. Technology's moved on to such a degree. Plus the fact, the money that you've got behind those kind of teams is just obscene.
Mm.
It's ob-fucking-scene. You know, and when people sit down and watch it, you know, Sky Sport, blah, 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 which is fantastic coverage. Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. But people are not aware of what's at the back of all that.
Mm.
You know, they're just not aware of it.
No.
And the influence that F1 teams have on our everyday lives, you know. And the cars we buy, that's what it's about.
Is it really? Yeah. I didn't realise that.
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, like with the Red Bull.
Yeah.
Honda engine. You know?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Very little people know that. They just think it's Red Bull, blah, blah, blah. But Red Bull don't make everything.
No, okay.
You know, the engines come from the Japanese.
Right.
You know, and that's one of the reasons that's, I don't totally know the details of it, but what's going on with this kind of issue of Mustafan moving somewhere and Lewis going to Ferrari.
Yeah.
I mean, Ferrari build their own engines. They don't fuck about going to the Japanese.
True.
No. They don't need to. They've always built their own engines. But, you know, there's so much involved in it. Commercialism. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you see the guys, this never used to be so much the case in my day.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, the interviews are all scripted. You know, they kind of say what's written down. Your Rolex watches, caps, you know, all sponsorship. That's why you see them always put caps on.
Mm.
You know, they don't. They, it's not their selection.
Right.
It's sponsor selection.
Right, got you.
You know, they change their helmets every meet.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so the sponsorship changes and all that because you're talking billions of pounds.
I saw it on The Apprentice the other week. They did a racing meeting, didn't they?
I don't know.
And they had to try and get sponsorship for different points on the car. And it was, like you say, it was millions just to get this tiny little piece of logo on a tiny part of the car. And but I'm like, what?
In saying that, it's not necessarily about, there is a commercialism to it, obviously. But you can't finance an F1 race team without somebody putting in a shitload of money.
Mm.
Because everything is just gaga. You can't go to Halfords and buy bits. Everything's made. It's fabricated. It's designed. You know, it's engineered all within that close confine of the people that supply all the bits.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, the race teams themselves.
Right, I get
you know, and the kind of headquarters and that where these people are, the workshops. I mean, my brother's been to, over the recent couple of weeks, he's been to the Red Bull garage that they've got in Silverstone. Or is it Donington? They've got either one of the two places. He spent quite a bit of time at Donington over the recent weeks.
Mm.
And they've got one there, which is just a testing garage.
Oh,
but,
okay.
You know, they move everything down there to run the cars, you know, throughout the inter-season break,
mm-hmm.
you know, to check everything out, to try bits, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. So it's massive. It's massive. Mm. If you go to somewhere like McLaren, their headquarters, holy shit. It's space age. It is absolutely space age.
Wow.
You know, and they're all like that. They're all like that. They are a really a fine representation of truly successful companies.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah.
They're up there with people like Coke, Unilever and stuff like that. Yeah.
Have you got a favourite team or driver?
I'm a Lewis fan. I'm a big Lewis fan, because he was the poor boy done bad, if you want to call it that. You know, check out his story. You know, his dad, they got no money. His mum did four or five jobs. You know, obviously with him being a black lad, you know, that was iffy against him.
Right.
His dad borrowed money left, right and centre. I think he remortgaged his house a couple of times.
Right.
But you see, that is standard NATO. It was in back in my day. I mean, Nigel Mansell, he I think he remortgaged his house three times.
Good grief.
Before he won the world title. You know, because the money that is involved in it is just cosmic.
Mm.
It is absolutely fucking cosmic.
Mm.
You know, but it's very glamorised now. Although it is,
going back to my youth. It was very glamorous then, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was. You know, it was. Oh, yeah.
James Hunt.
Oh, yeah.
And all that.
Nobody liked Jimmy Hunt, no.
And what was the one I liked? The one that had the terrible burns.
Nicky.
That's it.
Lauda.
I had a little bit of a soft spot on him.
No, Lauda was the boy. Mm. He was, yeah. He was. But no, it was. It's a great sport. It's not as good now, I don't think, as it was. I think. Funny, because I saw an interview with Eddie Jordan a couple of weeks ago, and he made a statement that I thought it really made me think, but I think he's right. He turned around and said, the cars are too easy to drive.
Okay.
And I think he's right.
Really?
I mean, he knows the business.
Yes, he does.
He had Jordan F1 team for some time.
Yeah.
Good drummer, by the way, Eddie Jordan.
Was he?
Yeah, he is. Very good drummer.
Handsome.
And his own band, which you used to play a lot of the Grand Prix.
Did he really? Mm.
Yeah.
Knew that.
Yeah, good drummer, very good.
And he's a nice guy, though, isn't he?
At one point, who did he? I think Johnny Depp. I think Johnny Depp played guitar for the band for quite a while.
Mm.
Yeah, certainly again, like the Monaco Grand Prix or the French, because that's in the same kind of area.
Yeah.
You know, he used to do a lot of the kind of, we'll say, even entertainment, was the Eddie Jordan band.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah. But no, he made that comment, and it was on the back of this lad that did Ferrari drag him in because Seitz was unwell or something. and they put this lad in, 16-year-old lad or something like that, I forget the guy's name, and did he get a podium or was he fourth or something like that?
I think he was seventh.
Seventh, was he? Okay.
Yeah, for his first Grand Prix, that is.
But they were screaming out about, you know, how good this guy was, which I'm not going to dispute.
No, it wasn't.
But on the back of that, Eddie Jordan said, I think the cars are too easy to drive, you know, because they changed them. They changed them an awful lot from moving from your kind of 1600cc engines, which were putting out about 1600, 1500 brake horse. You know, it's power-wise, it's a lot different now.
Yeah.
A lot different. Not as powerful.
Right.
You know, and again, I saw a bit the other week. This is an old bit of footage, but it was Lewis going to drive Ayrton Senna's McLaren.
Okay.
You know, it was devastatingly quick. Devastating. They're spaceships. Spaceships.
Really?
Yeah. And they've changed them so much because of the safety aspect of it, which you can understand, but at the end of the day, it's motorsport. And everybody knows that when they get into the car, when they get on the bike, they are quite prepared to kill themselves. That's why they do what they do.
Yeah.
Speak to Guy Martin. He's broke every bloody bone in his body, you know, and he still goes out there. He's well aware that he's going to kill himself. You know, but that's why he does it.
They take the risk, don't they?
Oh, yeah, that's why he does it.
Yeah.
You know, and to go around the Isle of Man for the TT at 200 miles an hour,
oh, God.
You know.
So many people have lost their lives doing that, haven't they?
You can't worry about when you're going to get killed.
And Campbell in the Bluebird.
Yeah, yeah, that's their speed record, so they're different. But, you know, no, I mean, you've got to be prepared to kill yourself, definitely. Jeez. And I don't know whether they are so much now. I don't know.
Well, there was a crash at the beginning of the last Grand Prix, wasn't there?
Yeah, there's...
And they had to restart it.
They restart it. Christ, if, you know, somebody chucks a tear away on the fucking tarmac. Safety car, let's get it out there.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
But going back to the beginning then, talking of Monaco.
Yep.
Have you ever been?
I've been to Monaco. Yeah, it was a lifetime experience to go to Monaco. And I stood on the start and finish straight, went to the Raskas, a hairpin, all the bits. Absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. It was strange because I went to the south of France and did the south of France, the Riviera, as they used to call it, back in the day when anybody lived there. David Niven, Richard Burton, the Burtons, you know, anybody who was anybody lived on the Riviera. And I just fell in love with the place. It's absolutely marvellous. Absolutely marvellous. And another thing I want to do is I want to do a road trip down south of France, the Riviera, and then make a book on the back of it and go to all the places where all the film stars lived and all that stuff, you know. Do a 007, bit of a Daniel going on.
Yeah, brilliant, why not?
And then ended up in Monaco. But
that would be great.
I've never been for the race. It was something that me and my brother were always going to do. It was a lifetime ambition. We'd go to Monaco for the F1.
Mm-hmm.
My brother's been a couple of times.
Have you?
Yeah. But I've never been, which is a bit of a drag.
Oh, I'd love you to be able to go.
Yeah, I'm well up for that. It's definitely a bit of me, Monaco.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
You know, if you made it, it's Monaco for me. That's what I think, anyway. I don't know where we are, actually.
I hope it's...
we're okay. Yeah. Sorry, our screen just went off and I thought, holy shit, we lost it.
And we lost this show. I thought we'd lost the whole conversation then, didn't you? I was like, oh my God.
No. It's just Apple. Just having
a
sleep.
Having a snooze.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to Monaco. My Monaco weekend. I never do nothing over Monaco weekend apart from literally sit with the TV.
Do you?
Yeah. And
all 3 days?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, see the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the quali, the warm-up, everything. That's what it's about.
Mm.
Yeah. Because the race could be a bit of a yawn because nobody, certainly with these the huge cars that they've got now, they can't get by them. You know, they're stupid.
What gets me, I'm not into F1 like you are or anything like that, but tell me this. I look at these cars from the cockpit and I see like a flip-flop. They're driving through a flip-flop. What the dickens is that?
That's in case they roll.
Oh, okay.
It's a roll case. That's what it is.
Yeah, no. Down in front pillar. Of their faces. Yeah, and I'm pillar. Like, huh?
Mm. Yeah. Because they sit very, very low, extremely low now. If you look at the kind of, you know, from my era, yeah. they were sat higher.
Yeah, they
and
were.
If you go back to further than that, you know, to the likes of Stirling Moss, Jim Clark, Fangio, you know, they were literally...
Yeah, we were up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it was in those days. It's just it progress, development and design. Plus then you've got kind of weird drag factors and all that to take into consideration. Right. But yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. It's in case they, you know, roll or something comes over the top of them because they take their head off.
Mm, okay,
you know,
fair enough.
That's what it's about.
Just puts me off looking at it. I think, oh, my God.
Yeah, you think it'd get in the way, but it doesn't. You know, they kind of just blank out the pillar that kind of supports into the main kind of cockpit.
Okay.
Yeah, just blank it out. They just drive around it.
Mm. You know, have you ever been to a Grand Prix at all?
I've been to loads.
Have you?
We used to do the British Grand Prix every year, me and my brother. They used to run it alternate places in that at that time. It was Brands Hatch and Silverstone, and they'd swap it each year.
Right.
But then Eccleston got involved, Silverstone got involved and moved the whole bloody thing to Silverstone, which, to be honest, is a good thing because it's the home of British motorsport. There's no disputing that. But actually, again, another circuit that's just up the road from you, Donington Park. Yeah. I remember a guy called Tom Wheatcroft bought that. And he bought it from a wreck because I think it was an RAF base during the war.
Okay.
And he poured millions into it and his life savings and everything to make it the circuit that it is now.
Right.
And he wanted to get the F1 British Grand Prix there. But it never went there.
It's never gone. No, I've been to Donington, but I'm not, no.
But the he wanted the bikes as well.
The bikes do go there.
Though, oh yeah, the bikes go there a lot more so than Silverstone, I think now. But that's a great circuit. But yeah, we did Silverstone. We do Silverstone for the week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, literally for the week, and that was when you could tip up on a Wednesday, and. You know, that's how I met Nicky Lauda, James Hunt, you know, all them kind of guys. You know, Peterson, Lotus, John Player Specials. You know, that was the time. Mm-hmm. You could literally just walk through the pit, you know, when they were testing in the week.
No way can you get near the pits today,
That's what I'm saying.
It's really bad.
That's what I'm saying. It's all fucking nonsense.
I've got my daughter... She's going to the British Grand Prix for the first time ever. It's her first Grand Prix and everything. And, you know, I just got a general ticket. Well, everything else was already sold out.
Mm.
You couldn't get anything else. And it's so expensive.
Oh, it's cosmic money.
It's ridiculous money, isn't it?
Yeah, cosmic money. Cosmic money. But then again, you see, you know, there's been a kind of a fashion created in this country over the past kind of 20 years, and that is that you have to go to these things.
Yeah.
Why these people have to go, because they know jack shit about racing, about cars, about motorsport. They don't know fuck all. They just think it's like going to Glastonbury.
Yeah, they've just got to be seen and got to stick it off the list.
Yeah, it's nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Do they buy music? Do they go to gigs? There's a percentage of them that do. But there's a hell of a lot of them that don't.
Yeah.
They just go because I've got to be there.
Yeah.
And tell people that I've been. I've been to Glastonbury, really. You know, I've got no time for that kind of thing either.
No, no.
And I think motorsport is very much the same, certainly the F1s, since it became a must-see TV show, where going back in its day, and you're probably going back, I don't know, 30 years, maybe too long, but it wouldn't even get featured, wouldn't even get mentioned.
Dear me.
You know, but it was people like James Hunt, and Barry Sheen that changed a lot of that because they were the personalities. Yeah. Them guys didn't give a fuck.
No.
You know, they were there to win. You know, I knew Barry personally and his family. And it was just, it was wild days. You know, there ain't no wild days in the UK now.
No.
Not at all.
Not at all.
It's all gone.
No, those days of 60s and 70s were the great times, weren't they, Nick?
Oh, yeah. The best times.
Mm.
Yeah, the best times.
We're lucky to have lived through them, aren't
oh,
we?
Oh, good God, yeah. I wouldn't want to be 17 now.
No, nor me.
Dear me. Not at all. No, country's not what it was in any way, shape and form.
No. Oh, no.
Blind leading the fucking blind.
Don't get me started. Oh, dear.
Well, we've chatted about F1.
We have.
Haven't we? Yeah. Which I can talk about for weeks, really. Weeks. Like I say, when me and my brother get together. But, I mean, I don't know anything like Gary does, because Gary's right on the inside of it. Big time.
Mm-hmm.
He's working with this company, race team now, that are running out Audi R8s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, well, that's a thick end of about 120 grand.
Really?
Just for the tin.
Good grief.
Yeah.
What does he do then?
He's a consultant.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's race consultant, and Ross, his son, he's head of development and research for Radical.
Yeah.
And they're running these new, I think they call them S1s, which apparently are literally like a fighter jet.
Oh, and, good grief.
Yeah, Ross works on that, the development on that. He gets all over Monza and France and all over the place. Nürburgring, I think he went a couple of weeks ago to test these cars.
Even I've heard of that.
Yeah, that's a good circuit.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, still got the fastest straight of any GP circuit.
Yeah.
Mm. Where Nürburgring was where Lauda crashed.
Right.
And where he got burnt.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Who are your brother and your nephew then? Are really in the business, aren't they?
Well, yeah, very much so. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Ross is right at the sharp end, big time.
Mm.
And my brother is a consultant, race consultant, with his. He's recently set up his own company called Mura Racing, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really pronounce it, I've got to say. So he goes in and sorts out these problems and, you know, sponsorship issues and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, that's what he does, yeah.
Brilliant.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good gig.
Mm.
Good gig.
What's your ambition then? With it, just to get to a Grand Prix at Monaco? Would that be your top ambition?
Oh, no, I should go before I die, before the co-op bang on the door, hopefully. Mm. Yeah, that's the plan, yeah.
Good.
But no, I just like to spend time in Monaco, south of France. Oh, yeah, Christ, yeah. Yeah.
Let's hope definitely. That you get to do your road trip then. That would be good.
Well, like I say, it's something I wanted to do since I went, and it's probably 30 years ago, probably not that long, 25, something like that, since I went the first time. But just to be there, man, it's funny because as I drove in the road, it sounds a bit of a nonce thing to say, but as we drove into the road, I just burst into tears.
Did you? Mm. Oh.
I have an affinity with Monaco, but I don't know what it is.
Mm.
But it's a spiritual thing.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a spiritual thing.
How strange. Mm.
It's really weird. And I tried to find a bit of the circuit to bring it home.
Yeah.
But the place is so clean, you can't even pick up a bit of gravel.
Oh, God.
You know.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Where they come out of the hotel is where where they go into the hotel, which is one of the fastest bits. And when they come out, there's a slight bend, and that's where I tried to get a bit of the tarmac. But the place is so clean, you just can't find anything. No, can't find anything.
Here, then.
Oh, no, nothing like this. No, pothole city.
Yeah.
But no, it's a bit special over there. It is for me. It probably isn't, but, you know, people say, you know, fast cars, loose women, that. Well, that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a lot more than that.
It's a lot more than that to you, isn't it?
It is. It's a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've had a very interesting conversation about
F1. I've enjoyed that.
Which I haven't done since been doing these.
To be truthful, but really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been a good show. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think we probably should wind it up.
Okay.
And we'll be back soon, listeners, with another show. And I'll be joined again, yet again, by Annie Brooks. Thanks for coming on, Annie.
Thank you for having me. You take care now.
Catch you later, guys.
Bye.